man. Yes! Welcome back, everybody. Another episode of Lieutenant Dan's Legs. We're all ass men. Even if you're a lady listening out there, you're now an honorary ass man.
I mean, I feel like if you're a lady, like, what else is there than an ass on a guy, right?
Yeah, that's what they like, right? Like,
I wouldn't be a boob guy or a boob woman, I guess, if I was looking at guys, right? Like, I feel like that would be decidedly
pecs.
Unattractive.
I think they call them pecs when they're on gentlemen. Although some men have boobs.
That's what I'm saying.
Whatever floats your boat.
Those are the people that you want to avoid.
This is so funny. I completely forgot, but this brings up an interesting thing that I wanted to talk to you. You were actually saying something before we started recording. Evidently, Space Jam has a new design for Lola Bunny, and you were pretty upset about it.
Oh,
do you want to talk about that?
I did actually see that. I actually have to like look at the image again, but it was one of those things where like, you know, like don't mess with success, right? Like they had something good and they decided to change it.
Well,
it was
remember
when like they had the whole Sonic the Hedgehog movie and everyone was freaking out because like Sonic was like actually like furry and real, right? It's like guys, like you already have like an iconic character with a great look. Like you didn't need to change anything about it.
Right. Okay. But do you really consider Lola Bunny to be iconic? I mean, you have the iconic characters like Bugs Bunny, Porky Pig. I don't know if this is coming off as sexist, but I wasn't introduced to Lola Bunny until the original Space Jam. And I feel like I haven't seen her since.
No, I mean, I'd agree with you in that sense that, like, you know, she's no Bugs Bunny or Wile E. Coyote or whatever, but for the people who have seen her in Space Jam, she has a very, very iconic representation in that film. And I think changing that in any way.
Would you care to elaborate on the specifics of the redesign?
Not specifically, since I can't actually manage to find an image right now.
Okay. Oh,
is it with this like sort of rainbowy jersey that she's wearing?
Yeah, that's the new
one. I guess her cheeks are bigger, which is weird when you consider she's a bunny and already has large cheeks. Her hair is different. Like her whole skin color is a lot more orange now, which I don't totally understand.
You're really going into the weeds and kind of glossing over all of the controversy that people have been fighting online.
You know, she's been desexualized.
Yeah.
Sexualized.
Yeah. There yeah. Say that three word. Times fast. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Basically they sexualized her and they gave her many aspects of the female anatomy and those are now gone, which, you know, looking back, it is a rabbit and it is a kid's basketball movie. I guess it's okay. Before we started, I was thinking about this and I was actually trying to come up with an argument. I'm like, oh yeah, well, how come no one's mad we put attractive women in movies? You know, like no one's ever angry that a super attractive woman's in a movie. And then I remembered, oh yeah, it's because that's a person and this is supposed to be an animal.
Yes. We are sexualizing a rabbit.
But they've basically taken her. They've made her more streamlined. You know, I mean, you could argue she looks less muscular, but
yeah, she looks less prepared to play the game of basketball.
Maybe,
in many ways,
perhaps. But that was good. I thought that was relevant. We could start bringing in some more movie news. To the show. But welcome in, everybody.
The news section. This is where you should be getting news. Oscar nominations came out.
Yeah,
recently.
That's right. Yeah. Do you have any Oscar buzz?
I mean, of the picks that are on for Best Picture, I really feel good about Nomadland, which is a fantastic movie if you have not seen it yet. Highly recommend. But that's on the opposite end of the spectrum of this podcast.
Yeah, we don't get to talk about good movies here.
No.
And this one, I think it definitely fit our criteria. We're doing 2002's Half Past Dead, starring Steven Seagal and his perfect castmate Ja Rule. I mean, just a match made in heaven.
I mean, like, I'm sorry, Steven Seagal and Ja Rule in one movie?
You could cut the chemistry with a knife. How could they
contain the energy?
It was cinema magic. Every single scene. So I had the IMDb up here. It's Rotten Tomatoes. So Half Past Dead, I believe it received a 3% rating on Rotten Tomatoes, which is
certified rotten.
Certified rotten. Not very good. So if you're familiar with Steven Seagal, he is an action star. A lot of fights. I would assume in the past he's done a lot of his own stunts, but those days are long gone. And he's just a little extra thick, a little more junk in the trunk these days. Can't really get around as much. And if you're not familiar with Ja Rule, he is not an actor.
He definitely is not. And we should also note that Steven Seagal has gone through a litany of sexual harassment lawsuits.
Really?
Throughout his entire career. Yeah,
that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, according to his Wikipedia page, from 1996 to 2018, multiple women accused Seagal of sexual harassment or assault.
So all accusations, nothing stuck?
I'm going to be honest, I haven't read this too closely, but there are a lot of lawsuits going on here. He also apparently had a violation with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. I don't know what he was doing with, like, money moving around there.
Oh, come on, Steven.
Yeah, it's not looking good for him. That's all that I have to say.
I mean, I believe in innocent until proven guilty, but then you start getting those multiple accusations over multiple decades. Kind of start to wonder.
It sounds like a pattern to me.
But I don't know the details of that case, but it can't be as damning and damaging as this film, Half Past Dead. So I guess we should start in the beginning. Steven Seagal is...
As most movies do.
Yeah, his character's name is Sasha, which is...
Sasha Petrosevich, yeah, something like that?
Yeah, he's Russian, but...
Has no Russian accent.
No, just no, like, Russian accent. Is
purely American.
Doesn't even look Russian. But his name is Sasha, which is pretty cool because he's supposed to be tough, and that's a woman's name, so I had fun with that. And Ja Rule plays Nicholas, and
who wants to be called Nick, but Steven Seagal refuses to call him Nick.
Steven Seagal is so... maybe I'm putting the cart before the horse. I didn't mind this movie. I thought it was entertaining. But Steven Seagal really stammers and stumbles through all of his lines. In fact, it seems like every time he speaks, he's fed the line moments before they hit record. And he
might as well be reading off a cue card.
He's just sort of regurgitating whatever he heard. And even when he tries to say the word Nicholas, it doesn't even sound like Nicholas. It's like, I like Nicholas. It's just very... Oh, he's so hard to understand sometimes. So Ja Rule comes to Steven Seagal with his boss, who is sort of a scary guy with a bad guy haircut and a big intimidating mole on his face. And you're like, okay, so this is the bad guy, right? Because he talks weird. He has steel blue eyes, very menacing, but we don't ever see him again. In fact, this movie has a bad habit of introducing maybe like three or four potential antagonists and then sweeping them away until we finally get to the real bad guy.
Yep.
But they come to Steven Seagal, and I don't even know, like, Steven Seagal's supposed to be boosting cars. Like, that's his MO.
I guess he made some line about like cars are easy or something. And I was like, what do you mean cars are easy? Cars are like a really complex machine. What are you talking about?
I don't know. I guess he means as opposed to people. And we find out that Steven Seagal has a dead wife who, gosh darn it, he just can't seem to get over, which I don't blame him for.
He refuses to take off the ring.
Right. And still wears the wedding ring.
Even though Ja Rule is trying to get him to move on. But you know what? After Steven Seagal tells him that He just can't move past it. That was his wife.
He's like,
Ja Rule instantly is like, yes, I respect that. No question. It doesn't seem like a conversation they've had in the like 2 years since his wife died, even though they've been friends. And like, only now did Ja Rule like ask about like, why do you wear the ring? You know? And it's like, I feel like that's a conversation you would have had at this point.
Yeah. He comes on really strong, suggesting that he moves on. And then as soon as he says, no, I can't, he's like, all right, I respect that. Nicholas is supposed to be taking Steven Seagal to this chop shop, I guess, where they bring stolen cars. I'm just guessing. None of this is relevant to the plot of the movie, but it's just kind of how we start. And on the way
we have to have a premise.
On the way there, one of my favorite parts of the movie, and I think I can find a clip or at least a clip similar to it.
I think I know what you're talking about.
Ja Rule is upset that Steven Seagal insists on calling him Nicholas instead of Nick. And he's like, I like Nicholas. Is that all right? And then Ja Rule says, nah, man, it's not all right. It's aight. And then you have Steven Seagal trying to say aight.
And absolutely failing at doing so. And it's not like a hard phrase to say. He doesn't have like, he's Russian, but he doesn't have like a Russian accent, right? Like,
yeah.
It's not like he's like, he obviously speaks English as a first language. Like saying the phrase I isn't like a hard thing to say.
No, not at all. But so this isn't the exact clip because it's kind of hard to find individual clips from this movie on YouTube, but this is from the very end. It's a throwback to the scene we just mentioned.
Now, Nicholas, do we have issues? Are we all right?
Hell no, we ain't all right.
Dramatic pause.
We are all right.
Whoa!
Oh, I love how Ja Rule pauses because it sounds like he has an issue. And and I know you couldn't see that, Adam, but he is smirking the entire 30-second pause that this drama is supposed to be building because, hey, he's hinting at conflict before he finally says,
and then he's just like, the conflict is that you didn't talk. What was the phrase that Ja Rule said during the movie? He said, like, you didn't talk street.
Yeah.
I want to say that wasn't something that I said. That was something that Ja Rule said in this movie.
In that conversation, he's like, man, you're whiter than I thought. We're going to have to, you need to thug it up a bit, is what Ja Rule
said. Yeah, he said, you need to talk thug or something. Like something that was like, okay, if it wasn't Ja Rule saying this, there would be a lot of problems.
So we get to the chop shop, and it's your cliche warehouse where, you know, guys are just sawing metal inexplicably and there's sparks all over the place for no other reason other than sparks are fucking awesome. And so one thing we kind of jumped over when Sasha, played by Steven Seagal, is meeting with the first bad guy, they put him through this polygraph test and they ask him, hey, are you in the FBI? And he says no, and he passes. So we can trust him. And we're going to partner with this guy. As soon as they get to the chop shop, who walks in other than the FBI right away? And
it's the FBI.
It's the FBI. The jig is up. But all they want from Ja Rule is to rat out his partner, his boss, and they'll give him no jail time, witness protection. He's good. But Ja Rule doesn't play it
like that. Ja Rule would like get like a clean slate, and all he has to do is just rat out this boss of his who like threw his friend through a rigmarole for like no reason. And like Ja Rule like clearly doesn't like love this boss of his, but he's like, no. I can't not defend this guy, right?
Ja Rule has throughout the movie, he has so many opportunities to be upset and to like really stick it to people who have wronged him. And he just doesn't. He's very loyal to a fault. So he pulls out his Uzis, guns a-blazing. We have a gunfight, and there are so many bullets flying, and it's only one person that's hit, and it's the person who's too old and too fat to move, and it's Steven Seagal, who is shot in the back. And Steven Seagal to this point hasn't even done anything illegal. He just happened to be there. And Steven Seagal is basically dying. He's hallucinating. We're led to believe that he is starting to cross over. He's having these flashbacks being with his wife who died for some reason. And all of a sudden,
unclear,
they're able to bring him back to life. And they reward him by sending him to jail because he's busted. And Ja Rule and Steven Seagal meet up 8 months later in the new Alcatraz.
I do have to say, though, that at no point during this shootout did Steven Seagal, like, shoot at the cops. All that he did was, like tackle Ja Rule to the ground and right. get him to stop shooting. Like, he didn't actually commit any crimes here. I guess he did steal the car, but, like, you know, like...
We don't even know that, do we?
I don't know. Like, they talk about the fact that the car is worth, like, whatever, like $200,000, right? And so it's like you could imply that he stole the car, but I don't actually think Steven Seagal has committed a crime in this movie at this point. And yet he's in jail.
He's done very little to no action, and we're about 30 minutes into this action film. I mean, there's been action, there's been a gunfight, but the main character has taken part in literally none of it. So we're in Alcatraz, the new Alcatraz, which is, you know, it's like Alcatraz, but better. I guess.
Notably in the same location that Alcatraz was in, but just like better tech or something.
Yeah, it's like Alcatraz got a facelift or something.
Can we talk about the version of Alcatraz that was in this movie? Because I actually have to say, like, it seemed like a pretty dope prison. Like, you come in and, like, there's, like, this big man. Is it Corrupt that was the actor playing the, like, very large guy who was just playing, like, video games?
Oh, that wasn't Corrupt. I think Corrupt was the little skinny guy who's painting, like, a Sistine Chapel-esque mural on the side of the wall.
He was the guy, like, on, like, on the, like, rope thing. Whatever.
Yeah, on a harness, painting a mural. Another guy's playing video games. Alcatraz is supposed to be the hardest, most unlivable prison on the face of the earth, and yet there's one guy playing video golf and another guy just painting. So it basically seems like a summer camp at this point. By the way, Steven Seagal shows up to new Alcatraz in a do-rag, and never takes it off. So he took Ja Rule's advice and he thugged it up. And
there's also a basketball court in like the main area of the like cell block.
That's right.
They're shown playing basketball during the movie, like just casually playing basketball.
Well, it's just a normal hallway, but there is a hoop, right? Yeah. So they can play. They can shoot some hoops. So right away, there is an issue because Steven Seagal, and this is an issue that doesn't come up later. They're not building it up. There is no foreshadowing. But Steven Seagal sets off the metal detector because he has a titanium knee. And one of the guards has a problem with it. And so the guard, instead of just, like, in my head, if you go to prison and a guard has a problem with you, he throws you to the ground and puts you in cuffs or something. But this guard decides he's going to square up and just sort of fist fight you because that's how they handle things in the new Alcatraz. It's a very old fashioned gentleman's way of handling disputes.
And like, and we skip past the part where like the guard could have asked, like, I think he did actually ask, like, what you pack in there?
He's like,
Mr. Seagal.
And he said, it's my knee. Like, that could ever be a joke or sarcasm. He's like, don't give me that sass.
I'm like, serious. Dude, I have fucking
no, literally, it's my knee. Who would have metal in their knees? That's ridiculous. And he starts fighting. Okay, so that's when we're introduced to potential bad guy number two, which is
the warden,
who has a very dramatic introduction speech, kind of letting these guys know that, like, hey, you're not in Kansas anymore. You're under my roof. You're going to live by my rules. Yeah. And he's a very...
And if you do what you're told, you can smoke cigarettes all day and play video games. So, I mean, like, what's the point?
And maybe paint some pictures and shoot some hoops.
That was another part of this movie that I didn't get. Like, all the prisoners had cigarettes at all times, which I guess is like normal for prison, but like they could just like smoke them anywhere. It didn't matter that they were like in their prison cell. It was just like, yeah, I'm just gonna like light up a cigarette. And like, where'd they get the lighter?
So he brings Steven Seagal and Ja Rule and the crop of new inmates into the cell block where they let everybody out. They let them all out and they're all standing outside. And they're introduced to the man who is going to be the first person executed at New Alcatraz, which I don't know why they had to make a big show of it, but everybody's out to receive him as he walks through the center corridor. And Adam, do you remember why this man is being executed? Do you remember his crime?
It wasn't
for murder. I mean, when you think of execution, you're like, okay, well, he had to have killed someone.
Yeah, capital. Right.
Multiple like people. Capital, this crime. Guy is a serial killer. I mean, that's what you do, right?
Let's see. I'm looking at the...
I know the I'm answer. At,
oh, he stole... I'm looking at the Wikipedia page. He stole $200 million worth of gold bricks in a heist that resulted in 5 deaths.
There you go. Okay.
He hid the loot.
So they really bury the lead there because the only information they give you to start... is that he knocked off $200 million with the gold bricks, which you're like,
oh, really?
And you're like, at this point, I'm starting to poke holes in the story. I'm like, okay, you don't get killed for that.
Yeah, you don't. You get sent to death row for stealing $200 million worth of anything.
For some reason, you're supposed to like this guy, so you can't make him a cold-blooded murderer. So they had to get really creative, right? So you find out that he tried to steal $200 million worth of gold bricks from the government, which, like, you know, fuck the government. Who cares? Go get that gold, man. You can't kill someone for that. And then you find out that those 5 Treasury agents died in the process, which he goofed, you know, he goofed. And I don't even know that you would kill someone at that point, but it certainly makes the case a little stronger. And then eventually he reveals that he volunteered to be executed because, you know, he's just tired of the rigmarole of the appeals process and going in and out of court and having to wear a suit and a tie. It's all just getting old. I don't know
if that says anything like anything about our justice system or if that's just more like this guy is insane and just like didn't care about fighting for his life anymore.
Well, it's this weak writing that like this guy has to die for some reason and it can't be for like child murder. So let's throw something together. So,
The guy on death row has to be a likable character, but it's also like there's so many other ways you could have gone with it, right? Like it could have been like he's a murderer, but like he didn't do it. He's innocent. This is unjust or whatever. But like instead, they're just like no. He did it, and actually like volunteered to die.
So this guy, he is being taken to the execution room where it's very high tech. You know, he has like one of those video boards that you can generate whatever background you want. You can have a city landscape, you can have the desert, all kinds of. He's eating his final meal, which seems Japanese, like maybe he's drinking some hot tea and
I think he was drinking some green tea.
Some green tea and like rice, or very simple, very light. I don't know if that's the way I would go. But
he seems like very into the like Zen Buddhism.
Right. Kind of he seems to be at peace and he's ready to transcend to whatever's next. And he asks to see Steven Seagal for some reason, who he's never met and should have never heard of if he's on death row and in prison. But somehow he's heard that Steven Seagal was dead for a number of minutes before being brought back to life. And he wants to meet with him to see what that
is. He wasn't just dead for a number of minutes. Steven Seagal was dead for 22 minutes.
Is that what it was?
They said 22 minutes he was dead. That's a long time to be dead and come back to life, I have to say.
Well, I mean, maybe it makes sense. Some of the stammering that Steven Seagal goes through throughout the flick, he probably suffered some brain damage, but he's back and he doesn't really have anything to offer, right? Like they don't. The writers of this film aren't bold enough to suggest what the afterlife is like, so Steven Seagal doesn't really help him on that front. And that is when we're finally introduced to the real bad guy, who is played by Morris Chestnut, who at the beginning was outside the building at Alcatraz. He like worked for some official,
like a DA's assistant or something. Like, and he's like a government official.
Right. And you thought the DA was supposed to be the real bad guy, but he's not important. It's actually the DA's assistant, Morris Chestnut, who was outside the building at a press conference talking about the opening of New Alcatraz. But for whatever reason, he has to jump from a plane above Alcatraz into on top of the building. That's how he gets in, even though he was already on the premises.
We also meet during this sequence Judge Jane McPherson, who is at the time also a Supreme Court justice. But, you know, I didn't understand a lot of the logic behind this because it was like, she's a Supreme Court. Okay. So I'm in like a legal process class right now. So this like annoyed me so much. It was just like a Supreme Court justice wouldn't be the one like presiding over this man's like capital punishment trial. Right. Like, and he wouldn't be the guy. She wouldn't be the guy signing the like you will be going to prison and dying, right? Like that's just not what the Supreme Court does.
And when you go to the Supreme Court, it's not one judge, you know, it's
there's nine of them.
There's like, nine judges. And someone writes a decision, but it's not like any one person signs the death warrant. But evidently in this scenario, this one Supreme Court justice in an unprecedented case where there's only one judge signs his death warrant. And she's very noble because she signed the death warrant. She has to be there in person when he's being executed.
Like, she doesn't actually have to.
I don't know. She acts like she has to, you know.
I think she was like, morally, I have to be here to watch you die, which in a weird way is kind of sociopathic.
Yeah, I don't know why. And like, there's like members of the media, like the press who are there, and they're just, everyone's just chilling. And when Morris Chestnut and his band of goons come in with M16s, everyone's in the observation room and they're just sort of acting like this is part of the rundown. Like this is supposed to be happening. No one's overreacting, but Morris Chestnut, he wants that gold. He wants that gold, and he's going to take Lester, the death row inmate, and bust him out of there or something. But fortunately for Lester and for the FBI, they have a man on the inside, which is Steven Seagal. And he's not going to go down without a fight. And another note that I had that Lester was supposed to be executed at midnight tonight. And man, do they love a deadline in the movies. That is plenty of time to stop something.
Yep. I didn't understand. There's so many things about this movie that I was like, why? Just like, why? Why would you choose to do that? But okay.
Yeah. So Steven Seagal is like on his way back to his cell when the guard and these goons kind of cross paths and they shoot the guard full of holes. I'm not sure what happens. Steven Seagal is able to take some of them out. And then the second...
I thought Steven Seagal just like fakes dying and just like drops
that's
to
right,
the floor.
That's right.
And they just like walk
he
past
He plays him, dead like, and they walk past him. So Steven Seagal has yet to fight. We're more than an hour into this movie and he hasn't fought a single person. But we have a second resurrection in the film. Steven Seagal takes the guard's cattle prod and shocks him back to life.
It's like Steven Seagal died and was revived. So
yes,
he has the necessary experience to do that to someone else.
There have been more resurrections in this action film than deaths, which is a nice twist. I didn't see that
coming. I was not expecting that at all.
We finally get into some fighting for Steven, and like I said, the guy doesn't move. He's in maybe one fight sequence where he has like one hand up against his chest and then the other one, he's just sort of slapping fists away from him. It's the most limited, isolated movement as possible. It's hilarious. And there's one woman on the crew who busted into the prison. She's supposed to be, I guess, the eye candy of the film.
Yeah, I like didn't know how to feel about that. It was just like very clearly they put one woman in the like goon squad just so she there could be an attractive woman in the movie.
Just all leather. Nothing is practical about her outfit. It's nothing you would wear if you were on this.
She's wearing very, very heavy blue eyeshadow.
Very heavy blue eyeshadow. Her like her blouse is like it's everything's leather and it's cut, you know, right below the breasts. But for whatever reason, she has like a cape. like a very flowy cape that like on occasion she can sort of flip around for dramatic effect, but something that would have
like you're not Batman, bro.
Something that would have snagged on any number of things as they were breaking it. But so Steven Seagal has gotten the prisoners and they arm themselves. They bust into wherever they keep their guns and they're kind of getting ready for a showdown, right? And Steven Seagal has figured out how to save Lester, but not the judge. So the bad guys still have the judge and they're brokering this exchange. So the prisoners are on one side, the bad guys are on the other, and they have the judge and Lester sort of walk past one another in this exchange. And as Lester is walking past the woman, he's trying to look her in the eyes because they're familiar. Lester and this judge, they have history. They've spoken like they're actually kind of close. Like it hurt this judge to put him behind bars.
And it's like oh, if it hurt you, like why'd you do it? Like you didn't have to sentence him to die.
She was just doing her job.
It should also just be noted that like these guys have gotten themselves into quite a situation here, right? Like they parachute into New Alcatraz, right? So they're already on an island, right? And that's hard to escape. Their helicopter like completely crashes through. Right? They've no escape plan. And now all of a sudden they're holding not only the prison hostage, but they're holding a Supreme Court justice hostage so that they can steal an inmate set to die on death row so they can go find the $200 million worth of gold that he stashed somewhere.
This is
high stakes for them. I gotta say
it's very elaborate. It's very far fetched and they didn't really think it through because there are a lot of obstacles. I mean, that Supreme Court justice is their biggest bargaining chip, but even if they are, I mean, so once their helicopter crashes, they're basically on the phone with the FBI and they're trying to negotiate a helicopter, which the FBI seemed prepared to give them. And I think they did. I think they end up getting one. But it's like they have to go to where they think the gold might be. They have to dig it up out of the ground. And it's just like there are a lot of maybes and ifs and, you know, just a lot of stuff in between them and their goal.
Morris Chestnut has also committed multiple acts of murder during this. Most notably, when he just shot a priest point blank.
That poor bastard.
Like, Lester was like talking about like having found God or something, and then Morris Chestnut just shoots the priest and is like, "You found your God now?" It's like, no, God isn't represented in a person. That's the whole point.
And if you were sort of losing it, like, oh my God, why did he do that? Morris explains, he's like, you see, I'm a psychopath, a sociopath. I can shoot anyone and not feel bad about it. Oh, that's what a sociopath is. Okay, thank you.
It's like, I was stretching for a definition there. You know, I really was struggling with, like, how could he just feel okay shooting all these people, right? It's pretty obvious.
Yeah, you're in the writer's room, and it's like, man, I really want Morris's character to shoot this priest, but God, why? Why would he do such a thing? What if he's a sociopath and he doesn't care? Perfect. Perfect.
It's the classic. It's breaking the like number one rule of like of movies, which is show, don't tell. Like you don't tell the audience that your character is a sociopath. You show them that your character is a sociopath.
I don't know. That's pretty scary, though.
They were doing a pretty good job of showing that he was a sociopath when he shot a priest point blank, right? Like, that's pretty insane. You don't need to, like, follow that up by being like, by the way, I'm a sociopath. We already know.
So in this exchange, there's, like, this bright flash of light as Lester's trying to look into the face of the judge, and he can't quite see her, and it's like, ah, shit, oh, well. So they make the exchange, and Morris Chestnut, and his gang, they get out. The FBI comes in, and they realize that the woman that they traded Lester for is not the Supreme Court justice. Steven Seagal has goofed. And I think it's a woman from the press corps who was like interviewing someone before the execution. But so now they have to figure out how to save the Supreme Court justice and, catch up to these guys in their helicopter. And the ending kind of wraps up very quickly.
Yeah, this movie moves like very quickly from
the first half is very slow as you wade through the three or four bad guys who aren't bad guys. And then finally they're trying to wrap it up, and it ends with a pretty cool, two helicopters. They're above the Golden Gate Bridge, and they are trying to get to the Supreme Court justice, who they just throw out. They just throw out their only bargaining chip, and they just sort of throw her from the helicopter.
Like, why would you throw her from the helicopter? Like, she's a Supreme Court justice. What are you doing?
I mean, it was the only thing preventing you from going to jail for the rest of your lives. Or, I don't know, in this movie, being executed.
Yeah, I mean, like, you threw away your Supreme Court. You threw away the Supreme Court justice, right? Like, the FBI now has zero qualms about shooting down your helicopter. Or at least they shouldn't, right? Like, they should just shoot you down.
They should.
You don't have anything valuable.
They have Lester, but Lester...
Lester was set to die anyway.
Who was set to die, who was a dead man already, who had already made peace, who had found God on the inside, is strapped with a vest filled with grenades. And as soon as they throw her from that chopper, he pulls the pin and takes himself and everybody else with him. Bye-bye, Morris Chestnut.
Is it shown where he gets this, like, vest of grenades, or does he just, like, have it? And he just, like, always had it?
I don't know. I'm going to guess that as Steven Seagal and the other prisoners are rifling through the gun storage or the armory, that they find these... all these grenades, which, having grenades, does that make sense to have in a prison where you would just like, hey, break it up, you two, and you just toss
it. And it was just like, it just like readily was available in like a suicide bomber format where they could just like put it into a vest super easily. And he was like, I'm ready to go. You know, like what?
And as soon as they threw her overboard, like, he seized his opportunity, and the biggest grin came on his face. It's like, thank God that bitch is gone, because I am going to take everybody with me. And he blows himself up, blows up the chopper, blows up Morris Chestnut, and Steven Seagal has to jump from his helicopter, and he's able to catch up to her in the air, sort of corral her, pull a parachute, and the two of them kind of float safely down to the water.
Yeah.
And Steven Seagal, who was tipped off where the gold bars were, it would have been nice if he had just taken that for himself. He tells the...
It would have been an understandable move. Like, right. I get it.
But he's an informant for the FBI, and he tells them where the gold is, and they find the gold, and that's the movie.
Here's what I don't get, though, right? So, like, he's, like, an FBI informant, right? Like, was it all part of the FBI's plan to, like, plant him in the prison? Like, I don't understand. Like he just, like, how does he become an FBI informant? Like, who was he informing on prior?
Right. So, this is a great question, and it's another question that the writers had, and they tried to justify it, but it's another ham-handed attempt at logic. So so Steven Seagal is an informant for the FBI, fair. But they put him through shit. The FBI shoots him in the back. He's dead for 24 minutes. Miraculously, he's brought back to life. And after that, because he loves the FBI so goddamn much, he agrees to go into Alcatraz for a full two-year sentence, where I guess he is supposed to befriend Ja Rule and get him to rat out the boss, right? The boss that we meet in the beginning. And the reason why he would go through all this is because that boss was responsible for killing his wife.
So and it all makes sense.
And
now.
He can't. And so that is why Steven Seagal would risk his life and go to prison and go through all this bullshit for the FBI, because that one guy didn't even directly kill his wife, but employed someone who killed his wife.
Much like John Wick's dog dying at the beginning of John Wick, or which movie? Which John Wick movie did the dog die in? Was the first one that sets off John Wick going after the entire world. This is basically the story of Steven Seagal. His wife dies, and he will stop at nothing to kill the person who's responsible.
Yep, and he does, and at the end, he doesn't even seem satisfied or like he's gotten anything from the experience. He's still pretty depressed about her passing. So,
because his wife is still dead. It's amazing. It's like killing other people didn't like solve the problem.
So we've reached the end of this one. Real quick, Adam, how many legs do you give this flick?
How many legs? Let's see. We do our ratings out of 5, right? I feel like I ask this every week.
We do.
And always forget what our rating system
and we,
is.
And we kind of like pigeonhole ourselves because there's only a maximum of 5 ratings. So a lot of movies are going to have the same score, even though they're not even remotely close to being the same quality.
I'm giving this 2 legs. I like, it's not that I didn't enjoy it. It's just that like, I like didn't understand Steven Seagal for like half the movie.
No.
And the highlight of this movie is easily like just Ja Rule just being in the movie. Like the fact that he's there at all makes this movie worth watching. But yeah, there were way too many flaws and not enough comedic aspects to those flaws for me to be able to look it over.
A fun Ja Rule moment, the helicopter that crashed through the roof of the prison. Ja Rule is at the controls. The gun controls, and there's one scene where they shoot a bazooka or a rocket launcher at the helicopter, and he's able to shoot it from out of the air.
What about you? What are you feeling for this?
It's not great. I like Steven Seagal, but he doesn't fight, and you don't expect him to talk, but he can't talk, so he doesn't do a lot. Ja Rule's not very good either. I give this 1.5 legs. It was a good try. I enjoyed the movie, but it certainly wasn't good. I can't say that it was good.
I mean, I don't think any of these movies are good, right? Like, I think if we ended up watching one of these movies and it's good, I think we did our jobs wrong. So
yeah, I think we probably need to head back to the drawing board once that happens, which we will do. We definitely will. And, that's a different song, but that's okay.
new outro song, I guess.
It's a new outro. I'm okay with it. Thanks again for joining us here at Lieutenant Dan's Legs. We'll be back in about, 2 weeks or so.
Something like that.
Don't set your watch by it.
Keep a consistent upload schedule. But, this has been fun. Half Past Dead, starring Steven Seagal and Ja Rule. You should consider watching it. I can't really recommend.
Go check it out if you don't have respect for your personal time.
Yes.
Talk to you guys next time.
See ya.